This episode of Behind the Bots is brought to you by Fingertech Robotics, North America's top manufacturer of combat robotics parts. If you're interested in building your first combat robot, check out Fingertech's Viper Kit, which includes everything you need to build a fully functional, competitive Antweight. Fingertech also carries a complete line of wheels, hubs, motors, and other components if you want to build a bot from the ground up. Check them out online at www.fingertechrobotics.com.
From our living rooms, as we practice social distancing, this is Behind the Bots, the podcast that brings you the stories of the builders behind BattleBots. I'm Chris.
I'm Luke.
I'm Lindsay.
And I'm Kyle.
And today on the podcast, our interview with Bite Force Captain Paul Ventimiglia.
As always, we'll wrap up the show with this week's installment of Robots Around the World. If you like our show, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn, CastBox, Player FM, and Podbean. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Behind the Bots, or you can check out our website at www.behindthebots.com. If you like what you hear, tell a friend. We really appreciate your support.
Time for this week's Combat Robotics News. I have 11 news items for you today. Let's start with Witch Doctor, which published a 43-page digital magazine this week detailing their journey through the 2019 season and post-season live event at Amazon Remars, what they've been building in the off-season, and some fun behind-the-scenes facts you probably didn't know. Highly recommend reading this magazine. Extremely well-produced. Check it out online at www.teamwitchdoctor.com/magazine. Speaking of Witch Doctor, the second installment of the Witch Doctor Junior video series was published this week, with Team Captain Andrea Galately giving builders a comprehensive look at the drive system on the Viper Antweight Combat Robotics Kit from Fingertech Robotics. In this video, which I honestly learned so much from, Andrea describes how gearboxes and wheel size affect speed and pushing power, and how to calculate the top speed of your combat robot. Kyle, I know you got a chance to see the video. I know you got to read the magazine. Thoughts on all of this amazing media coming out of Team Witch Doctor this week?
I don't understand how this team full of adults with jobs are able to put out such high quality, amazing content for free all the time.
Yeah.
They're destroying the social media game. They don't have a viral TikTok video that I know about. But other than that, they are crushing it on Instagram. They are crushing it on Facebook. The magazine's great. Like, it's legit a good magazine. I want a printed copy of it. The articles are really good. The layout's nice. It's easy to read. They did a great job. I love the Witch Doctor Junior videos. It's a little bit old for my kids, but not by much. Like, I'll bet my son could get like most of it, you know? So I'm really excited for that content to be available to him when he gets a little bit older. They're just doing such a great job. Man, I've loved all of their like interviews / just sit down and talk sessions with the other teams. I've learned so much about the new bots and the new season from that. Yeah, Witch Doctor should just become producers of the show already and start producing content for BattleBots. I mean, that's where we're headed. Let's just go there.
It is interesting that that a team is producing kind of the caliber of the content that you'd expect from the entire show. Like, I would love to see a BattleBots magazine. I would love to see a BattleBots podcast. I'd love to see, you know, a BattleBots build kind of diary, like off-season build diaries. BattleBots book, you know, Andrea produced that picture book with Caleb Kempson. Like, they're putting together live events when, like, they got 300 people together to watch the finale last season. They're really paying attention to the details and really building a strong fan base. It's incredible to watch and just doing so much to help the sport. You know, they Witch Doctor Junior is not just a video series. It's also a physical program in Miami that you can send your kids to at Witch Doctor's Makerspace. So it's amazing. I really, you know, give hats off, voodoo top hats off to Witch Doctor and the team, just because they're doing really incredible work. And I was so impressed with the magazine. So yeah, great work this week.
Yeah, and then we forget they also just find time to do Power Wheels Racing Series.
Right. Yeah. There's certain people where you're like, I'm pretty sure you have like 25 hours in the day, because like my big accomplishment was that I made a grilled cheese sandwich this, you know, for lunch. Not put out a book and a magazine and all of that. Speaking of Florida teams, let's go to Team Extinguisher, which is upgrading its aesthetics with a custom paint job from Roth Flake. Roth Flake is run by Dennis Roth, whose dad, Ed Roth, created the legendary hot rod character Rat Fink. In the offseason, Extinguisher captain John Flack shipped Extinguisher to Southern California, where Dennis and his son whipped up a new custom paint color for the bot, which now sparkles and shines. Sawblade's Captain Jameson Goh this week posted video of the team's new dragon-shaped sawblade spinning freely and perfectly balanced on its new weapon shafts, writing, quote, "We can't wait to hammer down in the battle box." Lindsay, as our resident Sawbay, thoughts on seeing the new dragon-shaped sawblade?
Yeah, I mean, that thing looks really cool, which is what you come to expect from Sawblaze, who, you know, really pays attention to the details of their design and you know, every year finds new ways to kind of amp it up and make it look cooler and cooler and scarier at the same time, which sometimes it's hard to do both, but I feel like they always manage to do that. My favorite thing is when I was following them on Instagram and I saw that come through, and the first comment that it showed said, "I hope it spins up faster than that." Which is like someone just like flicked it with their finger and it was, you know, just slowly rotating. I was like, yeah, I think it'll probably go faster than that in the box. But what do I know?
You hope to goodness that he's trolling. Like, please be trolling, sir.
No, what people realize is that Jameson Goh this upcoming season is going to be entering the battle box and spinning it by hand.
Everything is, you know, done by hand these days.
Right.
You know, homemade. So maybe that was his
it's
quarantine
a fixed,
project.
It's a fixed gear spinner.
Speaking of perfectly balanced weapons, Team Malice posted video of their beefy horizontal drum Red Rush spinning slowly on its weapon shaft to test its weight distribution. The team got together for a build sprint in California this past week, where they put on the bot's new wheels, worked on gearboxes, and even got in some time for some insect weight fights, which they streamed live over Twitch. The orange puncher bot Tantrum is undergoing a dramatic redesign in the offseason with new thicker armor that protects the bot's billet chassis. It's also bringing a second chassis to the competition in case their first one gets damaged beyond repair. The team posted a photo of the new armor, and a number of top builders weighed in, with Witch Doctor driver Mike Galately summing up with, "Wow, that's chunky." Chris, I know you saw this video. These photos from Tantrum. What do you think about these chunky photos?
Chunky is the perfect word. I don't think that there's a better word. Which is, it's actually strange because Tantrum's first iteration was just actually a 250-pound steel fist.
I remember that. Yeah,
that's no motors, no wheels, just a 250-pound fist that sat in the arena, and it would be up to everyone else to perform in the fight.
On over to the UK, where the folks behind Extreme Robots Live are launching a new app that allows you to remotely control real robots and watch them over live stream. The company this week launched the website realthingsplayed.online and invited people to test out the app by remotely controlling a robotic arm that's live 24 hours a day. In the near future, the app will allow people to remotely control the 2,100-pound house robot Major Damage as it destroys household objects with its hammer, crushing jaws, and flamethrower, You'll also be able to remotely drive 250-pound combat robots Beast, Ripper, Dantom Kia, Can Opener, and Halo. Chris, I know that you had thoughts about the network the network needs here to successfully operate combat robots remotely.
Can you imagine like lag dying in a 250-pound combat robot scenario? It's like you get that one hiccup, and the next thing you know, your bot's in pieces.
Okay, if it was me, I would just blame it on the lag if I lost. Well, even if there was no lag,
there'll be no accountability anymore. Right. Be like, I can't believe I lost the championship. You know, my home Wi-Fi went down because, you know, my dad's watching Wicked Tuna in the other room.
I love this concept of remote controlled things over the internet, just being a thing in the future. Like they said that you may be able to drive remote controlled cars on tracks in the future, like remote controlled, like maybe earth moving equipment, just like paying $20, getting behind the wheel of a remote controlled skid steer or something and pushing around dirt, smashing televisions. I'm not sure, you know, like I think it's pretty cool. And I could certainly see it being popular.
I hope that the remote controlled skid steer thing does not become real, because I have a feeling I would lose Chris to that. That would just be his 24/7 hobby.
Yeah, we just had a major landscaping undertaking in our backyard, and I realized that you know, if I ever need a fallback career as a skid steer operator, I'd be one happy camper.
Chris, I know a little later in the hour you ask Paul Ventimiglia about his shed building plans. I didn't know that you were planning a shed. Like you're watching shed videos on YouTube.
What aren't we planning? That's
yeah. Lindsay's been watching them too. She shed videos. And you know, I think what we're going to end up doing is perhaps a combo shed, where maybe we have half a shed that is more utilitarian, you know, house that lawnmower, put the yard equipment in, and then the other half would be a Bob Ross inspired painting studio / beetle weight factory.
Oh, I love that. That's a great idea.
/ maybe podcast studio.
Right.
The new heavyweight Whammo is getting new wedgelets designed to feed opponents up and into its huge bright green overhead bar. Brothers Craig Danby and Chris Danby applied to 2020 BattleBots with Slammo and Whammo. Slammo was accepted while Whammo was not. The team writes Whammo will likely see action in the UK on Extreme Robots Live. Speaking of Slammo, a quick update to the TikTok story we brought you last week. Craig Danby's video of Slammo beating up a poor defenseless lawnmower now stands, as of Monday night, at 3.5 million views. Builders, it's time to get ticking and talking. Lindsay, as our resident TikTok expert, any thoughts on this 3.5 million view viral video from Craig Danby?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty impressive what he was able to do. And he you know, didn't stop there. There's a series of videos that came after that one, where this poor lawnmower is just continually taking a beating in one way or another. I don't know what it ever did to Craig, but clearly, you know, something very terrible. The last video that he uploaded, the lawnmower was just sitting on top of a ladder. And then Slammo just comes up and knocks the ladder over and makes the lawnmower fall to its, you know, untimely death yet again.
70% of home accidents actually occur when people are on ladders and Slammo takes out the ladder below them.
I think I read that back somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's so great though. I think so many teams could be utilizing TikTok to their advantage. And I'm not saying this just because I'm biased and I want to see more BattleBots content on a platform I already am, but that plays into it for sure.
Everyone's favorite elephant-themed bonker bot, Nelly, is celebrating Pride Month by digitally painting their bot with the Progress Pride flag, which includes elements of the rainbow gay pride flag, the pink, white, and blue transgender pride flag, and black and brown stripes to symbolize solidarity with black and brown people. The photo from Nelly includes a short history of Pride Month, Pride Parades, and the Stonewall Riots. The team writes, quote, "We are proud to support our LGBT friends through thick and thin. We will stand strong and support them through their struggles, and we will lift them up and celebrate their successes. We will not tolerate discrimination against them in or outside of the BOT community, and will continue to speak out in support of them for as long as needed. We see you, we love you, we value you." And finally, we're closing out the segment with some sad news. Sharkorpian teammate John Hoffman has died. John was a longtime builder and close friend of Sharko captain Ed Robinson, who was trying to figure out what to do moving forward. Earlier in the week, he had considered selling the robot for $10,000, but now says he might instead try to recruit some new team members to compete at BattleBots. Ed writes, quote, "Without John, I couldn't even hope to feel the bot, along with all the other projects we did together. He was essential to Team Blaze, and I really can't even think about doing BattleBots alone. BattleBots had reached out to me and helped me rescue the bot from John's storage. They would like to see me attend, and we are trying to locate a couple people to start a new team. It's still way up in the air, but I think John would want the shark to fight." Within hours, he was contacted by Zach Hassanane, the builder and captain of 2018's Deviled Egg, who agreed to join the team. If you'd like to reach out to Ed to help him keep the shark afloat, look for his post on Facebook. Ed, on a personal note, we're so sorry that you lost your friend. You spoke so highly of him the last time we talked, and I know how special he is to you. You're in our thoughts. And that's it for this week's news.
After the break, our interview with Bite Force Captain Paul Ventimiglia. This week on the podcast, we have a very special guest. He's the captain of the most successful heavyweight combat robot in the world, with three championship titles since the reboot of BattleBots. His bot, Bite Force, a bot whose name is shorthand for reliability, balance, toughness, and meticulous attention to detail. Welcome to the show, everyone, a name that you probably are intimately familiar with, Bite Force Captain Paul Venti Mocha Frappuccino. Venta Migliarelli. Ventum.
Help I recognize out, an Andre Bardin reference from a mile away.
Welcome to the show, Paul Ventimiglia. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for having me. I appreciate the positive distraction during all these stressful times.
Well, this is now your third time on the show.
That's pretty exciting. Is this like the Saturday Night Live? We get to have the Alec Baldwin Five Timers Club.
You're currently the Tom Hanks of Behind the Bots. How does that?
It's an honor.
I think you get a special jacket now.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
All right, send them my way.
Well, let's just start by talking about Bite Force. It's entering the 2020 season facing the toughest field of competitors in BattleBots history, including the new super heavyweight Walker class and the reemergence of the team behind Chomp, a bot that would no doubt love another shot at the reigning champ. We're looking forward to getting into everything Bite Force in the hour ahead. Let's talk about, you know, what's elapsed between the last time we talked. I know that the world is a very crazy place right now. Can you walk us through what is a typical day for Paul Ventimiglia in the new abnormal?
Dean and I have a very fortunate setup over here where we moved into our new home in September. And luckily for us, it's a little more space, and that's been very helpful for, you know, when you build BattleBots, you need a lot of garage space, obviously. And now that we're home a lot, I have sort of endless supply of home improvement projects that need to get done, and now, you know, more reason to do it. And Tina is working from home too. So she normally is in the city, and right now it's working remote, leading her team. So it's probably more of a challenging thing for her because I'm more used to working at home on consulting projects. So other than that, we are, you know, pretty blessed and fortunate. So we have a pretty good home setup.
Now you and I we've went down a deep rabbit hole the other day as far as shed design. Have you made?
Actually, I have an update on that.
You have an update. Okay.
It's been one of my long dreams.
Breaking behind the bots news, Paul Ventimiglia, Shed Design. Let's hear
it. This is more that you will be jealous. My neighbor is now beginning to build a shed, like a nice studio shed, the same way that I want to build it, randomly next door, so I get the firsthand watch and see how they're doing it and watch up close, unfold, live.
You get to watch everything not to do.
Yeah, well, it's also inspiring me. It's been even more drive to help me picture what this little shed studio could look like. I'm not sure how much we could do in there because it's sort of limited by size, a little 10 by 12, but every little extra space bit helps when it's garage is filled with robot parts.
Would any robot parts live in this shed?
It might be more of a Lego room. It might be sort of like a podcast or a YouTube kind of room. But it could also be assembling sort of gearboxes and the cleaner parts of building robots.
Might I make a suggestion? If it's going to be a Lego shed, you should build it out of Legos.
That would cost a lot of money.
Right, but it would be protected from even the most giant of foot.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to step on that during construction.
So how else has living in Silicon Valley changed? You know, how's the community responding to COVID-19? How is what's day-to-day life like and in Silicon Valley? And how do you think it's a little bit different than everywhere else?
Well, because of my job, I was often communicating with Asian manufacturers in December and January. And so on a personal level, I very quickly understood, you know, how intense this would be. In impact, I had no idea the length of time and how it would unfold. I, back in January, just thought we'd have like 1 month at home. And so we are able to get a lot of rapid deliveries with things like Amazon Delivery and Whole Foods and Instacart over here. But Silicon Valley has so many delivery startups and quick to, you know, order Grubhub and Uber type companies always popping up, that it's pretty convenient to get everything delivered remotely over here. And that's what made it pretty easy for us to not have any trouble. And right around that time, I was able to make a few deliveries from things we might need to stock up on. And the normal sort of ByteForce pit had things for us like masks and hand sanitizer, because there's a lot of germs in BattleBots normally. So we didn't have to go out to the store for a lot of those critical items, which is part of what made us so lucky over here. But now we are able to work from home, so we do. We don't have to go out for our jobs. We're very fortunate in that respect. And so we do our part by just staying home and cooking at home. And we have a lot of fun trying out different foods and cooking all the time anyway. So in that sense, we just have it feel a little bit like a weekend, except where you're more stressed out by, you know, seeing your friends less and seeing coworkers less. And we've been exercising more by walking around town, and we see people, you know, following rules really well around here and being pretty safe. And a couple of times we've had to go out to stores. It's still just as awkward as everywhere, I'm sure, where people don't know how to use their masks or when to use them and that kind of a thing. But people have been pretty nice. We're very fortunate to live near nice people around here.
So I take it you haven't had yet to accost anyone at Home Depot and and throw gloves and masks in their direction.
No, I more feel bad for them. I've worked in places since I was a kid where you want to be nice to all service people, and I did have to wait in Home Depot for a half hour for the order that says it's already ready. But all you could keep doing is asking, is there anything I could do differently for the next time or to make it easier for you? They say nope.
I've never seen a Home Depot employee who wasn't really prepared, but that guy, random plumbing enthusiast in aisle 15 with the cargo shorts, he doesn't seem to want to comply.
Yeah. You can't control what others do, only what you do. So that's why we just try to limit our total number of times we have to go out of the house and the number of minutes we spend in certain places and do all the best practices we can.
We have to exercise precaution wherever possible. And so in that vein, I'm curious if you could share with us some of your thoughts on the COVID precautions that have been ideated for BattleBots 2020. There were three options kind of presented as possible routes to proceed with the production of the show. Would you mind like sharing some of those with our listeners, and then, you know, sharing your thoughts on what you think we should do?
Sure, I can share a little bit, but I don't want to speak too much for all the teams, because I know that there are so many different opinions about the subject from the team perspective. Mm-hmm. With, you know, so let's say between 50 to 80 teams all in play, and some coming from all over the world, and some with very different health concerns, some where the team members themselves are at risk for reasons you may not even, you know, realize or think about, for, you know, autoimmune issues or for lung issues, and then the immediate teammates of those or family members of those teammates back home. So and some of those team members, because we don't know about things like quarantine, even if they take off the length of time for the filming, it's not known what would happen if someone at the event became sick and they had to quarantine, who knows what, maybe your entire team, maybe half the building. And some people wouldn't be able to afford additional unknown quarantine time off of work without losing their job, that kind of a thing. So it's pretty controversial out there right now. And I think the summation is that it's all still being worked on and decided, both by, you know, BattleBots, the production companies, the TV networks, and the governors and the state and filming unions, and there's a lot of different factors in play. And so right now, we're not stressing too much thinking about the details of that aspect until things are really, really firmed up. And there's always talks of timelines and when things happen, but sort of until it's real, it's not real. And my team particularly, we tend to err on the more cautious side. We normally, during BattleBots, are very scared of catching the flu and germs. We, in the Bite Force pit, normally have hand sanitizer. We use, in the past, rubber gloves. We use masks for safety and safety glasses. We go outside to actually do the grinding. We just happen to be a more safety-conscious team than I think a lot of people are naturally. Mm-hmm. And so we err on the side of people are normally pretty disgusting when they're in groups of several hundred people, and it's hard to keep germs from spreading under normal circumstances. So it is frightening to us, I know, to imagine having to compete with all those unknowns. So we're trying to let it play out and see what happens, and we are all hopeful that proper guidelines will be in place. And I think everyone just keeps imagining that by next week, I'm sure we should know information about how to actually safely stop this. But that keeps not happening week after week.
Before we move on to some questions outside of COVID precautions, I wanted to ask you, I heard a rumor that you're going to build a box around your pit made out of Lexan that will be 10 foot high. The top of it will be completely and totally HEPA filtered. Is there any truth to that? And are you worried at all about asphyxiation during the event?
I think that sounds really good for having your own test box, but you still wouldn't be allowed to test the robot in there. So I thought of more extreme things than that, even including we normally drive down with a rented box truck. And so we sort of have a box outside, and we did discuss, well, one of the only safe ways, if there is really the coronavirus really badly, is to like work out of the back of your truck, which I've seen other builders do in the past. We've never done that, but way back in the day, there were certainly a few teams at the old BattleBots that would do that.
You could do the Waiachi outside pit with all of the 10x10 pop-ups.
We brought a tent to BattleBots last year, and we donated one to the grinding and welding area because it was so hot in Long Beach in April that I just can't work out there in the sun for hours and have our teammates burning up and getting sunburned also. So we had to do a lot of repair work that season, and we went out and bought a pop-up tent from Costco during the event and put one of our banners on it to block the sun even more.
That's awesome. All right. So I wanted to ask you about another hot event. So I guess the most recent time you really, chronologically anyway, fought with Bite Force was at the Amazon Remars event. So I wanted to talk to you about your thoughts on that event, just kind of get your kind of recap on what happened there and what you thought about the outcome.
Yeah, the Amazon Remars event was really fun. All of the corporate shows I've been fortunate to do over the years are honestly more fun because they are less stress overall, because they're shorter duration, less number of people, and you're more focused on putting on a show than just competing, which is a very different thing. During the TV show filming, we're putting on a show as a group, but we're just as a team competing, trying to win, just like everyone else. During the Remars event, it's very different in the sense that you're sort of the entertainment there to put on a good fight. So maybe it'd feel more like wrestling would, where it's a little scripted in the sense that you might talk to your opponent, and if they wanted to try something special, they might tell you beforehand, like, "Hey, we've done matches where it was a smaller arena." Like Logan was talking about this, I think, last week, and where they let the robot spin up ahead of time. Because the arena was so small, with the normal rules, a wedge would just come over and stop your spinner. It wouldn't be a show. So that's the kind of thing where the builders know that if you go to this paid show, you might have to do things you wouldn't normally do at an event. So that just makes those things fun. And then secondly, they of course handpick some really talented teams that are really fun to hang out with. And when you go to those events, usually now you've actually slept. So unlike BattleBots, where you're preparing all the time, the shows on the side, the robot's usually operational, ready to go, and so it's less stressful in that sense, and you're not sick from being up all night. And specifically, that Vegas event was actually the hottest robot event of my lifetime, and the heat was really, really tough and unbearable. And part of it being live was that it was outdoors at around 9 p.m. Because it's one of the times you could do it where it wasn't too hot. You sort of had to do it in the morning or the evening, and that worked out for their party being a cocktail hour. And so that's just one of the additional challenges where with live events there can be other considerations that make it even more challenging. When it's 9 p.m. you have to put on the show. If you're feeling sick, you don't get to sit out. You got to do it. So it's certainly challenging to do live and to get everyone's robots working at a reliability level that can do a live event and actually be counted on as being putting on a show and a performance, and not just showing up to compete and hoping the robot turns on. So it would require a little more vetting and a little more preparation on the builder side and on the production side to make sure everyone is ready and understands what it means to be ready.
Interesting. Yeah, that pretty much answers it. But our first listener question was from Sumi Schick, who writes, "How close do you think BattleBots is to becoming a live sport? And would you like that? Do you think that's even a good idea?"
I've heard it brought up by, production people and staff that they could envision one day always having a dream of a live sport, whether that's the only element or a part of a, how they envision BattleBots right now, where there's live shows around. I think that'd be really cool and really fun. And I'm all for it personally. A lot of the teams I know, a lot of the builders at heart really like the fast repairing aspect of the sport. And that gets a little bit lost if you have 12 hours and 24 hours to prepare the robot. That's not to say that it's bad, it's just very different. In that when you only have a few hours, it's a different set of skills than when you have overnight. And there's things that skilled teams can do overnight when they're local or more used to quickly solving problems by buying some parts in McMaster and welding something up that's crazy, versus just repairing something and like a rally car, getting it going for the next 10 minutes of the race. They're different skills and they're both interesting and fun. And the TV show aspect just tries to get it so that every robot's always at its best capacity, versus live event is a little bit more about the adrenaline of it being a sport where you have the really big time crunch element and you might physically get tired or hurt repairing the robot, and it requires like endurance and muscles and everything else.
I wanted to ask you another set of questions, just kind of unrelated to BattleBots, but King of Bots, have you thought about building something to p compete in KOB? And what are your thoughts in general about the robot fighting scene in China?
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's always been very exciting to me, and I followed it right from the start years ago. I've definitely had a lot of those team organizers and members reach out to me, and part of the issue for my team specifically about why I'm going to compete somewhere is that BattleBots and Robot Combat in general is incredibly energy sucking, and sort of like it just sucks the life force out of you. At some point, you get a lot of burnt out aspects, and so I personally experience a lot of burnout myself. Some team members don't, some other teams don't at all. So for me, just competing in general is a lot, and I put my all in. So when I sort of pick it, which one, that just is going to naturally take all of my attention and focus, and that happens with BattleBots right now. And part of it is that because our team has been very fortunate to have success and some sponsors that keep returning year after year and good relationships and partnerships, and we're very fortunate to have some toys made of our robots. We want to keep, participating in the event that I'm most passionate about and that I was most interested in since I was 13 years old was BattleBots.
Right.
And so the other events are really fun to watch and all that. But in my case, I don't have the energy and the effort and the sort of money to really do two or three big major events per year right now, in general. And then also, I've heard a lot of controversial stories, and I've watched the show myself, and I like the robot stuff a lot, but it's a pretty different show, and it's not really my style necessarily of the editing. And overall, because there's less control and less repercussions for how they would edit you in and with their culture and lifestyle is a little bit different. And I have a lot of trust and faith in that BattleBots has for many years not shown embarrassing, horrible clips of us, and their editing crew is not out to make us look like a reality TV show. And
For the
that's
most
very
part.
lucky, obviously. But yeah, it's the things you see out there that are funny are few and far between compared to what it could be. And none of us are professionals or really watching what we're doing when we're being filmed out there. And so it's not always the same, and you wouldn't have a lot of legal recourse and faith. So I'd have a lot to lose by competing over there in terms of possible relationships over here in the future if anything went badly or was shown out of order. And I know they're sometimes a little bit more into the scriptedness, like the live event show format style. And I wouldn't like giving up sort of the reality of competition.
Interesting. So bringing it back to BattleBots then, in preparing for 2020, what can you tell us about upgrades for ByteForce this year? I know that you probably don't have everything figured out because you don't exactly know who your competition's going to be, and some of this might be a secret, but what can you tell us?
I could say that the best answer is you'll know it when I know it. And it's I'm not sure yet because I think there's still so many unknowns about the event in general, and I'm always thinking of different ideas, and it always depends on what my teammates can do during that time frame to let us know what our plans are going to be that year. And I would say that, for example, on one end of the spectrum, the fallback is we have the two identical operational robots that competed at the Remars event, which both were used in various points in the last season, and each with four or five matches, and they're sort of good to go. So at a minimum, we have the same everything, fully ready there. And then on the other end of the spectrum, I'm always wanting to make new designs, and depending on exactly when this next event occurs would depend on what we would want to bring.
That's makes a lot of sense. So my second listener question is from Wes Ashworth, who asks, has the pandemic delay caused you to do anything different with ByteForce, the team, or your approach this season?
I would say yes, very much so. In general, as a risk-averse person, and someone who's pretty tired, I've had a couple of busy seasons there. And right now, the more world danger there is, the less risk we want to take, and the less money and time we want to invest in anything that can be risky. So certainly, it's tended to make me always err on the side of less is more right now, while there's a lot of unknowns in the world. And I think just like everyone else, we keep hoping it'll get more clear in terms of COVID preparedness and science knowledge and vaccines information and everything else to let us be more confident in what we do robot-wise. But by being trapped at home, I'm having more time to work on organization and garage things and building stuff like an outdoor shed to, you know, try to make it easier when it's time to get busy into robot mode.
So are there any new bots coming out this season that you've been seeing on social media that intrigue you? Anything you see coming around the corner that makes you go, maybe I might build something for that?
I think a lot of them really intrigue me just because I like looking at the new designs and just seeing the robots being built. So I love seeing always the new Waiachi robots. So seeing South Fusion and the new changes to Hydra are always really cool to me just because I like looking at them and watching them. I don't necessarily look at a lot of them and think I have to design something particular for them. I think it's pretty evident from our designs that we always prepare for the same few types of robots. You always know there's going to be a tombstone style spinner. You know, there's going to be someone trying to get underneath you in the ground floor scraping elements. You know, there's going to be an overhead hammer robot at some point and a crusher. So once you think of like some those basic designs and everything is a variation of those designs, at that point, I'm just interested in seeing how someone bolts their metal together and what kind of shaft they use and what kind of welding they do. That's the part that's really exciting to me. And I'm always curious to see, of course, things like hydraulics and pneumatics and walkers. So like the leg parts of the new Chomp look pretty awesome to me. And so whenever I can see a whole billet machine, like the new Adam Wrigley's robot Shatter, the frame of that looks pretty cool to me. The new Bloodsport frame, hearing about Hal's new design, seeing the pictures of Sal and Hydra, those are all really the most exciting to me, and I can't wait to see how I think the new Sal Fusion responds to hitting people and see if it's got a big enough base to be stable. And I'm curious to see if Hydra has any more flipping power. I know they've been working off season two. Yeah, is there anything else for the question? I forget if
you totally answered the question. No, 100%, 100%. So I asked my kids, I have a 4-year-old and a 5-year-old, and I asked them at dinner before I record the podcast if they ever have any interesting questions for the bot builders. And sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't. You know, like last week they were asking, if our guest had a nice mommy. I figured I wouldn't bring that one up on the podcast, but today my son,
we do have a nice team mom. two of them.
But today my son actually had a really interesting question that I wanted to ask you real quickly. He said, does Bite Force ever make you bored? Like, do you ever say I did it and now I want to do something else?
Yes, for sure. Actually, pretty much everything I build at some point during the designing and building process, the part I really like is the designing element for some reason. And actually building a machine and competing with it are fun and interesting in different ways. But in the design element, everything is sort of perfect the way you imagine it. And it's cool to think about, and you think about it for months. By the time we get to the building part, it's always very stressful. It's every mistake you do is costing you time and money, and your fingers are in pain, you know, when you have to drill the hole again and you haven't slept or whatever. So the building part is pretty miserable sometimes. And then some part of the building elements, you know, suck, like when you get injured or when you want, again, you want to sleep or the part doesn't come in right. So you have to make it out of a, you know, compromise in some way. And then competing, of course, is super stressful, but also really fun because you get to see everyone and actually repair the robot is really fun. But I like the design part. And once a robot sort of works and does its thing like one time, I feel pretty satisfied. So as long as I have like one good match where you hit someone, the robot still works at the end of the match, you can drive back your square, and like you've knocked a part off or something like that, I get fully satisfied, and that's it. That's enough for me to be happy. And then everything else is like big icing on the cake kind of a thing. And so sometimes I do get bored, and that's why I've built many different robots in my career, different weight classes, and even with the heavyweights, there's horizontal bar spinner, there's the tank treading jaws, there's vertical spinner. So I'm always thinking of new designs. I've long, for a long time, wanted to make flippers and crushers, and always just trying to find ways to make them more reliable or able to actually impart a lot of damage.
All right, so that brings up an interesting thought. So let's say 2021 rolls around and you're having a conversation with Greg and Trey, and they say you're not allowed to bring Bite Force as is next year. If you want to bring a bot, you have to bring something totally new. What would you, what design would you like lean towards the most? What are you thinking would be the next challenge for you?
I would certainly like to, I've always wanted to have two robots. That's my ultimate dream as a team, where same way the Waiachi team has multiple robots, same way, you know, Hal and Hannah have two robots kind of a thing, where it's obviously the same team members are allowed, but they consider them different captains, that kind of a thing. That's always been my ultimate goal, and to actually compete with that event, because you put in the same effort, you show up, and same amount of time off work and everything, you want two chances to have fun, because usually something goes wrong stupidly, and that can be your entire, you know, season's out. And for me, that's probably a flipper robot, a high power, like a launcher. But it could be also another version of Bite Force, because the moment you build something, and this is why I get bored of it, I want to build improvements to it. So the moment you know, you put it in the test box, and you drive it around, you learn a lot all at once, like, oh, it does X, Y, Z. I wish it could do it slightly better. Or it's so much more obvious now that I see it, how to make it better. And each time, by keeping the same robot, I've made incremental improvements only, not able to change the entire frame around, the entire weapon motor system. It's part of why things look kludged on, because in some way they are. And so I think a new robot could be, I'd love it to be two, and I'd love it to be a new version of Bite Force and something else that's more risky, a crusher or a flipper or something like that.
Awesome.
So there are a lot of bots, as Kyle mentioned, that are coming this year. Some that, you know, are new designs that we haven't seen a lot of before, and some that are kind of emerging in a new way. In this case, I'm talking about Perfect Phoenix. This was Brutality back in the day, and it got purchased and then ended up getting fixed up by Ray Billings for Tyler Wynn, who is the youngest driver since the reboot of the series. And given that, you know, this was your bot back in the day, and now it's changed hands into who can only be, you know, referred to as a prodigy child driver, also known as Doom Kid. What are your thoughts on this and seeing it back in the competition?
Oh, I love it. It's super exciting and flattering. It's a great story to me. I've known Tyler and his mom Julie for years, where when I first met them, and it's pretty memorable when a younger, you know, I assumed fan at the time, when I first met him, came up to me and was asking a question, which is very mature and specific about, you know, exactly which wheels I was using and was it this exact part kind of a thing. So I'm working on the robot, and I sort of lifted my head up and was like, oh, hi, like what, you know, like you're, you know, not just saying like, oh, wow, it's got white and blue and look, it has tires, you know. Which is normal for kids of his age for most of the interactions with that. So Tyler is super intelligent and mature, way beyond his years. And they had been trying to actually buy Brutality for me for years. And I told them each time that I'm open to the idea. I'm not, you know, opposed. It's, I just, I've never sold a robot before, but I'm glad to, for anyone that would actually want to work on it or see it go compete in some way. I just care that it was someone that would actually care about it, really.
Sure.
And eventually they made an offer, which I said, sure. I said, you guys want to come pick it up? And Ray is somewhat local in the 3-hour drive sense local to me. So he was willing to pick it up for them. And of course, when I knew that Tyler and Julian would be teaming up with Ray, I knew that it would actually be in good hands and Ray understood the robot. And so I could frankly describe to him, hey, these are the issues of it. Make sure Tyler and Julian know all these details that are, you know, tough to deal with a as is conditioned robot with broken aluminum frame and all that kind of stuff. And so they were fine with that. And I said, okay, then that's, as long as you understand the issues, then go for it. And it sounds really cool. And so I'm really proud to see them working on it. And the robot was really underweight back in the day. It was in the 220-pound weight class. I changed later on to the lithium batteries. And so it had even more weight freed up. And then now plus the extra 30 pounds, it should have 40 or 50 pounds for them to play around with.
Wow.
So who knows if that's going into the frame or, you know, weapon power or reliability, but it's exciting to think about. So it's a really exciting and flattering thing to see Brutality live on, because it was first designed by me in 2006.
Wow. So
14 years ago. And that version of the frame, though, is from 2009, the same one that won against Tom Hudson in BattleBots, but then was beaten by Toro Maximus in RoboGames and Combots Cup.
That's so cool. I mean, what an honor, and you know, like you said, how flattering to like see it live on and have someone want to like take the torch and take it to a new chapter. And that was one of the storylines I was really excited to see play out in the new season. And I guess I still am. I'm just really excited to see how, you know, this insane driver of a kid can kind of stack up against all the other drivers who have maybe a lot more experience, but he has
it's the coolest part of BattleBots. Yeah. Me, that everyone behind the box is the same, and you, whatever you put in the box is it.
Yeah.
It does not matter what you look like, how old you are, what you know, what people, you know, it's an enduring competition, which takes everything else out of it. So it's really special to see that.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Another bot that I wanted to ask about, one that, Chris and Luke and I have seen several times now at Norwalk Havoc competing in the Beetleweight form, is Smee, the very long, very weird bot that promises to give its competitors a death hug. We don't know exactly what the new version of Smee will look like for the season, because even the renderings that he had posted are now a little bit outdated and we haven't seen the updated ones, but we can basically count on it being very long. So do you have any like thoughts? I don't know if you would want to share them at this point, but how would you approach a bot like Smee?
Well, it's very challenging to fight every robot that's different and unusual. And sometimes they are the hardest robots to fight against. It's just part of the nature of robots that are big and floppy and weird are hard to push around when two objects weigh the same and one is physically very small. There's some weird physics that go on when you hit into objects and things. So I remember back in the day, there was a robot with bicycle tires that was drive over top of you, and you could hit it with almost anything, and it would just sort of knock it into the air more as opposed to actually damaging these flimsy bike tires. But I'm really excited to see what they come up with, because it sounds to me at its core like an entanglement robot. I mean, like, where the basic principle is to get in the way and entangle someone. I'm sure that it's not, but in BattleBots, that's pretty risky to sort of prove that you're not just entangling people. So I'm really curious to see how I think I read or heard that it had spinners on the sort of outer pods.
Yep.
And I just hope that they are sort of powerful enough to do some damage, and then it'd be really cool. And otherwise, if it's just sort of little flimsy spinners added on, that would be more sad.
Yeah. All right, so let's I guess move on to the target on your back, if that's what you want to call it. How can you tell us a little bit about how Bite Force keeps winning, even when everybody out there is you know gunning for you?
I think it's a lot of luck combined with all the right things going, where we have good solid design based around old-fashioned, good, reliable parts. And our team members spend a lot of time before the event preparing and during the event working on repairing the robot. So I have all of us watch out for those parts of the robot. And we put in a lot of, hours just in making sure we don't make any mistakes and watching out for each other. And I think that it pays off in the sense that it's not really about trying to win, it's just try not to lose. And you look over the parts that make you lose and focus on those areas. And it sounds obvious maybe, but if you just do it 1% better on average than the people you're going against, that's all it takes. You don't need to have the best designed robot. You just need to have pretty good design, very perfectly executed by a team that will do it over and over again without making mistakes. And I think we chose teammates that have competed in multiple different kinds of robot competitions and engineering competitions over their entire personal and professional lives, and work on projects like that, where you really got to have a good work ethic and attention to detail and skill, and it pays off at the event.
Yeah, clearly so. We have a listener question from Brandon Stamper, who asks, do you at all feel the pressure of everyone saying that you're unbeatable and saying that they want to see you fail? Bite Force is my favorite robot, and I hope you get another nut next season.
Thanks. It's very flattering, questions in general about the winning and stuff, because to me, I always assume, maybe pessimistically, the other robot is really good and can beat us. That is how I see it. So I don't see it in my head. I don't see a robot that we're going to go up against. Oh, this will be a cakewalk. In fact, the one that I would be thinking that, I'm more stressed about and scared about, because it would look even worse to lose against in a really bad way against a robot that you should beat on paper. If you have a 1v16 matchup, you have a lot to lose in the sense of no one's expecting that and that kind of a thing. So I just treat every robot in match like it's serious. And maybe the areas we look at on the robot are very specific in terms of maybe how a robot is prepared to try to get underneath you. We'll focus on that area if there's anything we can do on our side to handle that. But we're sort of thinking about that, months in advance at home, and doing the preparation at home to make sure we have the parts, even if we want to make changes at the event. And so by being prepared at home, it makes it a little bit easier to go into each match where you only have to worry about yourself. And so as long as I know that we test the robot before the match, I don't feel like we're ready to lose in that sense, just at the driving then. And I don't really feel the same target on my back, because I think people are pretty nice at BattleBots. So maybe they want us to lose, but they don't say it, to our face or to my face directly. And I think I would be in the same position if I was in their shoes too, where I'd want to see someone else win. And so I get it and I understand it. And I don't take it personally in that sense. In the same way that there's other teams I'd rather see win than other teams, because I just root for them like an underdog, or I like that team a lot. There's just not a lot of teams that I usually want to say I want to see them lose, but I get it. If someone, won many of the last BattleBots events, then you just want to see someone else have a good big victory.
So speaking of that, I see here in the script that Luke wants me to own up to my prediction or my controversial claim that Bloodsport, the terrifying horizontal spinner blade, could theoretically, maybe we'll see, beat Bite Force next season. So yes, now that I'm talking to you, I guess I have to say it out loud. to the source. And yeah, I mean, I don't really have anything else to say on this matter other than I just think that Bloodsport is terrifying. That blade is really scary, and I just see it defeating anything in its path. And, you know, if Bite Force happened to be in its path, then maybe that would hold true to that too. But yeah, any thoughts?
I've heard a lot of maybes, what ifs, and potentially, and any question phrased like that, sure, anything can happen. No, I mean, the new Bloodsport looks great and all that, but just fundamentally, when you have a horizontal spinner, it's very, very, very challenging to not skip off of the wedge of another robot. That's the kind of thing where if you had a turtle dome shaped speed bump of a robot and you put it out in the middle of the arena and turned it off, and now you go fight it with a horizontal spinner, the robot that's just sitting there as a, you know, ramp, a shell, could defeat the other robot by knocking them on their back.
Yeah.
Without even moving. And so it's just a really tough premise to win with a horizontal spinner like that. That's what we have for Brutality, and it works really well when you get underneath your opponent. And when you're slightly on top of your opponent and you skip off for them with a very powerful blade, that force is going to push you up very fast. So it's tough. Vertical versus horizontal is, if all builders are the same, the robots are built by the same builder, I'd rather be driving the vertical every single time, because I think that head to head, you're going to knock the opponent in the air, flip them over, or break them more easily.
No, that makes total sense. I would love to see it play out in real life, just because I think it'd be super entertaining. But
the new Bloodsport looks really good, but when it's like the thickness of Tombstone's bar compared to, you know, a Bloodsport style spinner. I think that blade could break pretty easily.
Yeah. All right. So now we have a bunch of listener questions. A lot of them are about Bite Force. So Jake Anderson asks, if you had to fight Bite Force, how would you go about it? Be specific. No, this isn't a thinly veiled quest for weakness. Why would you say such a thing?
I think Bite Force is what we wanted to make as the combination of good design for, you know, putting on a good show in terms of having a powerful weapon and able to rip parts off and send parts into the ceiling or flip people out of the arena, while also being reliable and able to win. And that's something that's like the ultimate blend for, I think, what every builder is trying to go after in BattleBots, something that looks cool, is entertaining, and also able to survive. And so I would face Bite Force with something that looks the same, but taking what we've done over the years, try and use maybe new frame construction methods. If I can get components inside the robot smaller, then we'd love to make a steel frame or a billet aluminum frame one day. Right now, I haven't been able to get all the inside components small enough to do that. But a more refined Bite Force would be good for it. Otherwise, when we fight people like Hypershock and Whiplash or Yeti and Witch Doctor, I think of them as like a floor scraping element vertical spinner. That's who you're fighting. And so to me, it's all the same whether it looks like Yeti or Hypershock or Bite Force. To me, they're all effectively the same. They have a weapon you don't want to touch, and they have some arms or forks on the ground. So that's how I face it.
Cameron Hutton asks, are there any potential matchups that you would personally like to have? And how heavy is Bite Force's weapon compared to other vertical spinners?
I think in general, it's lighter weight than most spinners. It's around 40 pounds, just under that, for the actual steel blade part. So for reference, maybe half of some of Tombstone's big blades, or I understand. I think people like Endgame have around 50 pounds. And also, we don't spin at the absolute max speed. If 250 miles an hour is the limit, I think Bite Force is geared more for like 180 to 190 top.
Huh.
And so it doesn't seem like a lot, but it's never the difference when you hit someone of, we would have won if we just had a little more power. That's not usually what the problem is. The problem is you part of your robot broke, or you were flung away, or your weapon broke, that kind of a thing. It's not, oh, we hit them really well, and if we just hit them 10% harder, it would have been the win. So in that case, we like to just devote more weight and resources to drivetrain and armor in general. And what was the first part of the question?
Just, are there any potential matchups that you would like to have personally?
Yeah, I generally know, because I everyone I face, I don't want to face. Everyone I think about, like I said, there's no, the easier looking the opponent is sort of the people I want to face the least, because it's worse to lose against them in terms of sponsors or how they think it played up on TV in a weird way. You know, the more embarrassing loss versus the same way that people want to fight Bite Force because there's not much to lose. It's nicer to go against Tombstone, a Witch Doctor, and Bronco, where it's okay if you lose to them.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, so we have a question here from Clepton Gilroy, who asks, can you comment on the veracity of the claim that Bite Force's frame was or was close to being split in half during the uppercut fight? Is there a photograph of the aftermath of that fight anywhere? For whatever reason, I just find it hard to believe.
I also find it hard to believe. It's a very extremely over-exaggerated situation. And the after that match, we did break a part of the robot, which is pretty severe. We broke one other. It's the weapon shaft. So you can't tell, though, when you watch the match. But we use what's referred to as like a dead weapon shaft, where there's a giant steel shaft that does not spin. It's part of the frame. So when you look at the ears of the robot, there's one big bolt on in the middle of the circular section on both sides, and that's threaded into this weapon shaft. And against Uppercut and against Minotaur, we sheared the weapon shaft straight through. It's a pretty brittle material, even though we didn't want it to be very brittle. So we've broken it twice, and I think there's like 26 or 27 matches for Bite Force or something. And so it's a low occurrence, and both times where it's happened, we didn't know for a while afterwards. Against Minotaur, we didn't open the robot up for a year, embarrassingly, because we thought it was okay. And then when we were sort of checking things apart and checking it out, we found the weapon shaft sheared, and we were, oh my God, that, you know, this is bad. against Uppercut, we knew about the problem, so we sort of had some more things in place. In which case it was like, well, we're glad it happened on a big hit that sent them over and got them on their side, and we didn't have to hit them again. So it wouldn't have been good to keep fighting, but that's just another one of the like what ifs, like every single match where if a certain robot hit someone a certain way, the match would go very differently.
Yeah.
So I think I probably mentioned to Alex, you know, about how that weapon part broke and we didn't want to hit them again. And I'm guessing that gets taken out of proportion. And the frame, though, it has one piece of aluminum for the entire base plate for Bite Force, even though it's sort of jigsawed together like a puzzle for the frame. And so parts of it, like a panel, could get ripped off. Like you saw it start to happen against the Hypershock fight or the Yeti fight. A little portion of the frame began to get pulled apart. But the base plate would be near impossible to break in half. It might bend, but it would never rip apart like Warhawk, for example.
Yeah. So similarly, Wes Ashworth asks, it seems like most bots have a billet or welded chassis. What about your bolted chassis makes it so tough?
It's a good question. It is a welded chassis, but we bolt on a lot of things to that chassis. So I think what makes it tough is that it's aluminum and it's welded together with interlocking tabs, and the welded aluminum fails and yields in a way that's more soft, like taffy, as opposed to ripping like brittle like a cookie. And so the inner part of the frame can handle a lot of force while not just like shattering. And then we bolt on things on the outside that are all the frangible armor that can constantly get ripped off. So for example, the top plate is always bolted on, and that adds a big strength to seal everything up. It would be welded, but then you'd not be able to get to your parts inside or repair the robot, that kind of a thing. So we use a lot of bolts there because I find that it's much better to have many points of contact spread out for both serviceability when you lose certain bolts throughout the event, to how things fail. And when you're only held on by a couple of bolts, you know, you can't stop that one bolt from breaking. But if that corner gets hit by a big spinner, you can determine, though, how many points of contact there are. So just put more bolts on there. And if we had a similar welded steel frame, it would be very thin, so it'd probably get bent easily if it was equivalent design. And if we had a billet frame, I think we just wouldn't be able to afford the time and money to build that in the style we do, because we generally don't make our actual new frame until a week or two before the event sometimes. And because we're working on other aspects, the preparation design, and we use water jet manufacturing and welding locally, so it's able to be done quickly. And with a big billet frame, I think you have to be really decided that you're going to use that exact frame for multiple events. I like to consider the frame and armor disposable, because you can never build it strong enough to handle Tombstone, but you can make it strong enough to handle Tombstone for like 1 or 2 minutes and then throw it out. Or in this case, repair it. But
yeah. So we have three questions from Bone Dead Robotics Captain Brandon Young, who asks, what are your favorite building techniques and why? Is this first question?
Is that okay? Yeah, that's hey Brandon. My favorite building techniques have definitely changed over the years. When I started, I liked watching like Hazard and John Reed use like polycarbonate, and that was really nice to work with when I was younger because I had no tools. And then I think now as an adult, I definitely like welded steel aspects because it's a little cheaper because you can design for laser cutting or water jet cutting. And when you repair it at the event, it comes out the same strength or stronger as you weld steel back in. So I think welded steel stuff is probably my favorite.
His second question is, what was your favorite combat robot you've built so far?
That's a good question. My favorite combat robot so far, I would have to say the current Bite Force, in the sense that it has the two toys of it, which is just the coolest thing ever to me, to be honest, and the fact that it's done well on a big stage. But if I was to just totally look inwards, intrinsically, like which robot was sort of the most fun, way back in the day, there was a robot called Entertainment. It was a 12-pound drum spinner, and it was based off of the Team Covert sort of Helios robot and Solaris back in the day. And that robot was really fun to drive and compete with. It was sort of like Minotaur is now, in that it was fully symmetrical and had a really powerful drum spinner. And it, when you fought in a small box, like an 8-foot square box, you could send the opponents into the ceiling right in front of you pretty hard. And that was really fun. And working on it, you know, you could go to an event with a suitcase with a couple of tools thrown in the suitcase and the robot. And it was just a lot of fun.
That's awesome. Finally, his last question is, what are some pros and cons from each of the Bite Force designs?
Well, the first Bite Force with the jaws definitely had the pro of trying to look really cool, in my opinion. I mean, I don't know if people liked it, but I wanted to make something that just looked like it could do. When people talk about a battle bot, they always say tank treads, and then they always picture something like crushing jaws or a mouth or something. And I wanted to make it just look like that, and also industrial with the bolts. So I like the look of it a lot. The cons of the first one, of course, are the tracks are really heavy, like 30 pounds of just the metal for the treads, and very sensitive to being destroyed or being jammed up. Luckily, it didn't really happen for anything more than a few seconds, when like debris got caught in there during some matches, and it always broke free by the end of the match. So that's a big con there. And not able to cause a knockout, which is why we didn't bring it back for the next year, because they changed the rules about you only earned damage and aggression points using your weapon.
Yeah.
And so the con of that was it was really hard to cause a knockout. And then for the new Bite Force, it's really the same, even though it's, I guess, changed. The newest version, I guess, just has the weapon motors or old mag motors, so it's more reliable. The pro of that one for sure is the ability to knock people out, rip parts off, put on a really good show. And that has the benefit of, if you touch someone once with the spinning weapon, you can really take control of the match. Versus with the tank tread robot and Jaws, you have to be on top of it the entire time and make sure you make no mistakes. If you have a spinning powerful weapon, you have a good sweet spot where if you get them in the front of your robot, hit them, you know, you're good.
So we have a few questions now from different builders. The first one is from Copperhead teammate Luke Quinn, who wants to know, when will Bite Force go brushless?
That's a good question. I also have that same question. I think we base a lot of our decisions on what we see others do often because I don't want to be a guinea pig for a high reliability situation. I think it's sort of like if you're building the Apollo rocket, you just brute force it and use stuff that you know works really reliably and really well. And don't change until you've seen it demonstrated to just work pretty well and flawlessly. And a big factor about competing is not just, can you make this motor and speed controller work? You might want to pick something that a lot of other people in the building are also using the exact same thing of, because if there's a problem with it, you have a lot of knowledge for how to fix it.
True.
A lot of spare parts available. And that's part of competing for sure. So it's, if you only had to do one match and put on demonstration, you can go for really risky technology. But in my opinion, with BattleBots, asking teammates to take off weeks of work and asking sponsors to put out money and support us. And I don't want to use something that's so cutting edge that the speed controller is just going to catch on fire possibly. But I think soon, the answer is within the next couple years, I'm hoping there'll be enough new speed controllers to make everything work. And I think there already are really good brushless motors that are totally okay. And we're just waiting on the perfect controllers.
That makes sense. Scorpios weapons operator Diana Tarleson asks, what is Bite Force's actual bite force?
I only know that because I just lent one of the spare actuators to Mark DeWitz of Ice Wave for making a gate in his office driveway. I think it's one of the 1,000-pound actuators, and it's reduced by several times because of the leverage. So I think it only has between 200 to 300 pounds of sort of crush at the tip. 1,000 pounds if you get all the way in there.
Madcatter teammate Calvin Eba, who competes on Team Madcatter and runs the very successful Butylweight Lynx, asks, do you plan on competing in smaller weight classes?
I do. So I have before with 12 as the smallest. I definitely want to compete in 1 and 3 pound events sometime. And like I was saying earlier, so sometimes just some burnout from competing. So the moment BattleBot says that they're taking a break, I will certainly look into smaller robot classes again. But right now in the off time, I like to spend more time playing with Lego or building Lego sets or working on our house, that kind of a thing.
Building that shed.
Building a shed, cooking food.
Nelly the LABot tactician, Rara Granger, asks, can I have one of your wheels? The answer is no. May I take it by force and trial by battle box?
Yes, if you can take it in the box, you can for sure have it. I think we've given some wheels to teammates before that are teams that have beaten us and made the wheels destroyed. But you can't just have one of the wheels only because the wheels are very time consuming and very expensive to make the way we make them. And I'm thinking about if people want to like ever buy some on like a Etsy store or something like that. I don't know if people will think that's cool, but there are certainly some wheels where I can't run them again in a match. And they're maybe like first batches or had some issues kind of a thing, but I can't really sell them to builders to use because they're pretty specific. Maybe somebody wants to use them and they're not worth what they would cost to sell because the urethane is very expensive and the aluminum core is very expensive. but if people want to buy them, I thought about putting like a bunch up on and say each one is individual. This one has this kind of damage or this problem with it. If you want to buy it like a little art piece for your desk, you're welcome to. But I hang on to them because of the time in them to have around for testing right now.
Well, Rara is out for wheels, so you better watch out. I don't
Take
know
one how in the box.
I don't know how Nelly would go about, you know, removing a wheel from you in a match, but yeah, I'd be down to see them try.
Well, they have a powerful weapon, so a direct hit or pushing the wheel over the saw. Yeah.
So we have a very serious question from Mr. Craig Danby, who wants to know, how much wood would a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood?
I would ask Charles that question, or Chuck Pitts, or.
And then our last question from Matthew Cahoy asks, if you decided to take a break from being a team captain and wanted to join the team's pit crew, which team would you be most interested in joining and why? Side note, Kraken captain Matt Spurk says you're welcome to join his team anytime.
That's really cool. I want to hang out with Matt in Florida and do a tour of his old NASA facility in Disney World for sure. So at some point I want to do that when it's safe to travel again. For whose team? In the past, there have been times when I haven't competed, and I've been on teams with Mark DeWitz of Ice Wave a couple of times. So really like hanging out with all of them. There's a lot of teams I really enjoy joking around with and having fun with. You know, Ray and the Tombstone crew is always really fun. I think, though, hands down, it'd probably be Gary Jin and Free Shipping.
Ooh.
And Jin Ye and all their team, because they are the most laid-back, fun-having team in the pits. And that's where Tina spends a lot of her time whenever it's de-stressing away from the Bite Force team, when we need, like, breaks from, you know. I know that she's probably in the gravity chair in the Free Shipping pit. And so when we came back from BattleBots, we immediately bought a couple of the gravity chairs so I could have them for our pit for next time.
Paul, this is always, it's just always so fun and amazing, exciting to talk to you. Even now during the COVID time when we're just waiting on news for future, you know, BattleBots seasons. But we really, really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us. I hope that you and Tina continue to stay safe and healthy through these times. And we really can't wait to see you and Bite Force in the BattleBox again soon.
Thank you. That's really nice to say all that. And we love having you guys making shows like this where it keeps all of us entertained while the show's not on the air. And even the builders, we all learn things from your interviews from each other. So it's really cool. And it's great to hear your perspective. And glad to always come back and answer more questions as they come up.
After the break, we'll return with this week's installment of Robots Around the World.
Welcome back from the break. Time for Robots Around the World. Today we're headed to Austin, Texas, not for tacos, although I wish we were, but we're going to highlight a giant 3D printer that's capable of pouring the walls of an 800 square foot house in just 12 hours. It costs just $10,000 today to build a single structure using Icon's Vulcan 2 printer. In the future, the company says it hopes to get the cost down to just $4,000 per house. The carpenter finishes the house with doors, windows, sinks, toilets, and electricity, all the things that you would think about in a, you know, a normal house today. And they expect that that would take about a day for it to do. So theoretically, you could have a whole house, probably for under $10,000, in just a day, which is incredible. Icon would like to eventually start building houses on the moon and Mars. The company recently posted a job for an interplanetary construction system product manager. Imagine being able to put that on your LinkedIn.
It requires 6 to 8 years experience already building things on a lunar or Martian surface.
So, yeah, I mean, that's insane to think about, but also imagine, you know, how many different housing crises there are and how many could potentially be solved maybe with a technology like this. And you know, imagine how this could change the landscape, both of Earth and potentially Mars, I guess.
The thing that I really like about the Vulcan printer is that the houses have a lower carbon footprint than traditional kind of stick-built houses, because the insulation is part of the walls, you know, like they're using concrete, which is a more sustainable building material. And because it's 3D printed, you can just crank out an entire neighborhood of these houses that construction crews can go through and pretty quickly and easily complete. When you see photos of them, they look beautiful. They look very modern, really cool. And the price point, you just can't, you can't beat. You know, you could build an entire row of houses for the cost that you would normally spend building a single house. So really, really looking forward to kind of seeing the future of 3D printed houses.
I used to be obsessed with that show, Tiny House Nation. And I'm ready to be obsessed with the new 3D printed House Nation show.
How long will it be before we watch home remodeling shows on HGTV that are being remodeled on Mars?
Oh, wow.
Will it be in our lifetime?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Your upper Mars?
Right. We really want a picture window here so we can see the Martian landscape.
Our oxygen scrubber makes it smell a little sulfury in here. We just want to fix that.
We don't want an open concept anymore because last time we had a rupture in our airtight facility that sucked the couple of kids up.
So dark.
Well, that's about it for us today. We'll be back today with another mystery guest. We'll see you then, folks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.